give some comments for us? Round this up. Okay.
It's a hard act to follow all three of these presentations, which I think were outstanding in situating the problem. And I think one of the things that they did, the cumulative effect on me, was to give me a sense of how deep-rooted these convictions are on the part of people. So if we're thinking in terms of changing the minds of some of these people, what can we possibly hope to accomplish? So, I mean, not that I hadn't thought of that before, but my interest in this subject stems is a little bit from the outside. Obviously, just as a citizen, one is always interested in this, but my newest assignment is to write a kind of synthetic article about McCarthyism for the Historical Critical Dictionary of Marxism. So it's an opportunity for me to reflect on some of these things. And so it just raises just a few possibly incidental questions, but I think the underlying common question is of course just the what we make of the depth of this thing and how it can, what it implies in terms of what the left can actually do about this. How can it be overcome? In terms of getting more specifically to Chris's paper, I guess my the question I was asking myself throughout was to what extent this phenomenon of suburbanization, with all the aspects that he described very well, was a conscious imposition. And he did, towards the end, come to the pretty much the point of saying where he refers to it as the largest system of subsidization ever devised and so on, which I think was very interesting. One fact that I happen to have come across along the way, which maybe you encountered also, is that the connection of the right-wing agenda, the imperial agenda with the suburbanization was so explicit, and the personification of this was the fact that Joseph McCarthy himself not only led all these investigations and denunciation of communism, but was also was he actually chairing the Federal Housing Authority thing? You've run across that, right? I read it in this magnificent book called Picture Windows, which you probably know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Picture Windows by Rosalind Baxendall and Cynthia Ewan came out about 10 years ago. It's a brilliant. The subtitle is How the Suburbs Happened. So that's in a sense something that gives the focuses in on the conscious dimension of the creation of this and the suspicion of the urban populations, which you described very well. One other question that your focus raised for me has to do with the another interest of mine, which is political ecology, the environment, and the scope of changes that are needed in order to address properly the environmental crisis, and the fact that all the aspects of suburbanism that you described are the most profligate and wasteful. It's the huge waste that's involved in it. And so whether the environmental crisis itself gives us a handle on which to attack this whole phenomenon of suburbanism, suburbanization, and the physical arrangements that it has created, and to what extent it's actually possible, and this is sort of a question, to think of measures, practical measures that can be proposed to actually reverse or undo this. And this is also something I was thinking of for a long time, because for many years I lived in a city, Indianapolis, where I taught for 24 years, which was in a certain sense like a huge suburb, even though I was not in the suburbs. So it was all sort of single family houses, private car, and so on and so forth. So I was always, we had the fuel crisis in the early 70s, and I thought, oh, this is the opportunity to get people to sort of change their minds about things. And so trying to devise approaches that would readapt such a city to a less profligate form of living. And thinking of what one can actually do, so in other words, not just superimposing a totally different image of space utilization, but just thinking how we can begin to adapt. There was one street that I especially liked, and I don't know the history of that street, but it was no longer paved. It was covered with grass and trees, and it was just a street between houses, with houses on opposite sides. And so I figured, you know, if you do four out of every five streets, do that too, and then the remaining streets have these space where you could just have mini buses and something that would go and pick up passengers along, and then have bike depots along the way. But the reason I just mentioned this is that we want to combine somehow some practical policy proposals with our sort of general theoretical attack on this phenomenon. So this is just an area of questions to get into. Okay. Yeah, I really liked also the Corey's emphasis on the phenomenon of the outsider as the person who articulates the conservative perspective, and the whole phenomenon of presenting oneself as a victim, even as one is defending privilege. And this is a paradox that's always struck me and continues to strike me very deeply. And how, as you say, they take over, they learn from the left, they take over from the left. And to me, the most striking example of this in recent times has been their adaptation of the argument of multiculturalism as a pretext for gaining places for conservatives on university faculties. They can't justify their presence on the basis of the actual intellectual merits of what they do, but say, after all, give us some representation. We're a poor besieged and beleaguered minority. We deserve to have a place here. This is, of course, the whole thrust of David Horowitz and his whole screed attacking the liberal university. So the whole notion that this that they are victimized, and so it's just to give another example that I think was very of a contention that's very good. So I think Lauren's presentation also just reinforced this notion of the depth of this phenomenon, and your closing again stimulates again the same question of whether this I guess especially the environmental crisis is the phenomenon which to me represents the most total expression of the non-viability of the whole worldview that this is presenting, and to what extent we are now in a position where there are examples to attack this in a new way. Because as you point out, these conservative movements, they all die out, but they keep being replaced by another one that's just like the ones that they displaced. But does this have to go on and on forever? Are we perhaps now at a qualitatively different position from which a more successful and more wide-ranging attack on this can be made? And I guess also looking at it from an international standpoint, do you know of any instances, and this maybe other people also might know, where there's been a large-scale switch in significant sectors of public opinion in any country from the right to the left, sort of sudden kinds of change like this that have come about as a result of certain kinds of experience? This would be an interesting issue to address to try and fit into the whole discussion. So I think that's enough. Thanks a lot.